Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. James Alexander Thom, author of a dozen mostly historical novels with sales totaling more than 2 million copies, is among Indiana's best-selling authors. His works, which include Follow the River and Panther in the Sky, are noted for their historical accuracy, and he lives a life of almost frontier simplicity. Thom and his wife, Dark Rain, have a reconstructed 1840s cabin back in the Owen County Hills outside Bloomington. Recently, he was inducted into the Indiana Journalism Hall of Fame based upon his early newspaper experience. And at age 81, he's now seeing a revival of some of his novels as e-books. But if he has stepped into the future electronically, Thom still has at least one foot firmly in the past.
I spend all my time and skill trying to take my readers back 200 years or 300 years. And the funny thing is now that they're reading those books, those stories where I've taken them into the past, and they're reading them on pixel screens. And I think that's kind of funny. But if your writing is good enough, it doesn't really matter what medium you're using to read it, because you're not here anyway, you're in the story. So when Random House brought all my historical titles out in ebook format, I didn't know what to expect, but I was delighted to see that the royalties began to increase, because an awful lot of people are reading on the devices, I guess. But I do believe that if the storytelling is right, it doesn't matter how you're getting it.
You write historical fiction, and you've written a lot about Native Americans. You can't study something without developing an appreciation. What have you learned about Native Americans and the people that you write about that fascinates you the most?
I'm one-third as old as this country. This country is only three times as old as I am, if we consider that the country began with the Declaration of Independence. But for 10, maybe 20, some people even say 30,000 years, this was a populated continent with many, many people who had successfully lived here for a long, long time without ruining it. And so that makes me feel younger. You know, I'm just maybe an 80th of the age of the country. You know, I originally started my historical novels writing about the pioneers. And then after a while, I began to wonder how it was that these Aborigines, who did not have the conscripted armies and did not have the gunpowder and all that stuff, how they managed to fight so many hundreds of years to keep their country. I began to think there is something to these people that is really terrific. So I began to get involved with the Indians from the inside to find out what their ceremonies were, what their beliefs were. And I found out that their concept of the natural world and the spiritual world was the first one I've ever really been comfortable with. And that is that the Creator made all living things sacred, not just man. And man is not at the top ruling over everything else. Man is just one of the creatures. And he happens to be the most dangerous and destructive of the creatures, but he is just one of them. And I do believe that anything that has been given life is sacred, and that's what the Indians believe. I believe that this fits in with my natural tendency to be an environmentalist, because even before I became involved with the Indians, I was an environmental activist. And a part of dealing with life in a sacred way is that you leave something besides trash. The native people believed, and they lived here for thousands and thousands of years, because they believed that you have to put back as much as you take out so that your offspring, way off in the future, will have the same blessings that you had. And now, that made sense to me. That made sense to me so much more than the idea of the capitalist idea of growth for the sake of growth and using up resources until all of a sudden you don't have them anymore. So I was very, very comfortable with the Native American way. And although I don't, you know, I don't have any Indian blood that I know of, I do believe in my philosophical outlook and in my heart and spirit, I'm more a Native than I am a Paleface.
Your home is in the middle of a woods in Owen County on a hill.
Right.
Talk about this place and how that fits in with the philosophical awakening you had.
I'm 81 years old now. 70 years ago, my mother was a country doctor here in the hills, and she used to make house calls. And she would come up, there was an old family of Quakers that lived about 50 feet up here. And she would come out and take care of them. And eventually, she bought this land here, and she would time her house call just before sunset. And then we would walk down here with the old Quaker people, and we'd watch the sun go down over the valley here. At that time, when I was about 10 or 11, I thought, this is where I want to eventually build a house. And 40 years later, I did. And I built it right where I had dreamed of it. And fortunately, there was still enough of the beautiful countryside left that it fit with the dream. And I moved it was a big log cabin that had originally been built up in the northern part of Owen County. And I got permission to take it apart and salvage all the stuff. So I brought it all over here and rebuilt it. Most of the timber is recycled stuff, so at that time I started building, I didn't have any money, and the books had not started paying off yet. And so I pretty much had to build it myself. But I've been here for 30-some years now, and it's just it's a paradise to me now, especially with this woman here. Dark Rain is absolutely the perfect companion to live out here in the woods with.
You better get along if you're going to be this far out in the country.
We respect each other totally. We made a kind of an agreement that fighting is a waste of time and games are a waste of time. Neither one of us play games very well. And so the good thing is to share. And fortunately, she's wise enough and interesting enough that it's been fascinating for me all the time.
James Alexander Thom, whose historical novels, some based upon the Indians and colonial people of Indiana, have sold more than 2 million copies. There's a website if you would like more information. He's at jamesalexanderthom, that's T-H-O-M, .com, or you can drop me a note.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
The books of James Alexander Thom, a former newspaper man who fought as a Marine in Korea and went on to write more than a dozen novels, are filled with the kind of historical detail that readers really like. They include characters drawn from Indiana's past, including the remarkable Native Americans whose names are familiar to this day.
Tecumseh was among a number of people that we look back now as amazing leaders of Native Americans, including Little Turtle, mm-hmm. Blue yes. Jacket. What do we know about these people?
I'm glad you asked that question, because the Shawnee people were not a numerous people. They were a fairly small tribe, and yet I could have spent my whole life, I could spend 100 years writing about extraordinary leaders that they had. I've written about Tecumseh, who was a terrific leader. My wife and I have written about Nanhalema, who was a woman's peace chief, and she was a remarkable person. I've written a book about George Drewyer, who was Lewis and Clark's main hunter and interpreter, and he was a Shawnee with some French blood in him. But I could write a huge novel about Black Hoof, for example, who lived to be 110 or 112 years old, and he spent 80 years of his life fighting against the white men. And I could write about other chiefs, you know, because they were just a remarkable people. And one thing that made them, I think, so visible in history was that they were very mobile people, and very many of the tribes liked to have an alliance with the Shawnees, because they would get the Shawnees in between themselves and the white men. because the Shawnees were not only terrific fighters, but they were traders and ambassadors, and they were just awfully good at functioning right there on the margins, you know. The frontier is a fascinating thing when you realize that it was not just a line. It was the thing that the two cultures osmosed through, let's put it that way. There were people from the white community that came in and became half Indians to gain what advantages they could as they moved into a territory. And then there were people like Killbuck and White Eyes and so forth who would go back to the American government and say, here's what we need. And Little Turtle would go back. He would go to Washington and he would say, we need you to stop the whiskey sellers and all that kind of stuff. So there were people going both ways. And the culture was a kind of a spongy thing. And it was the best and the worst. The Indians who were on that edge, they were really on a knife's edge. And so they had to be very, very flexible. They were trying to protect their people, but the two sides in any conflict, you know, like the Americans and the British or the French, were always trying to get the Indians on their side. And so a chief had an extremely difficult problem trying to protect his people when he was being extorted and threatened by this side and by that side. So the frontier, it was a much more interesting place than I realized when I started writing about it. And I kept learning, and I wish I had another 50 years because I could really explore that thing. Now, the book that my wife and I did on Non-Halema, she was one of those people who operated in both sides. She spoke several languages. She was beautiful. She was diplomatic. She could convince her people to come to the peace treaties, and then she could influence the peace treaties. And she was, appreciated and honored by many of the white leaders, not just because she was a beautiful woman, but because she got their people to the treaties, you know. Of course, eventually she was betrayed by everybody. You know, the white men didn't go live by the treaties, and her own people began to resent her because she had talked them into these deals. She had also become a Christian, which made life difficult for her because she was still responsible for her own people's native spirituality. And, of course, the missionaries hated that she would go do those those things that were a part of her other responsibility. So she was always being buffeted around by these forces. She was one of the best examples, I think, of how complicated the frontier was, I mean, among the stories that I've told.
Are there good sources of information? What's it been like to do this kind of research?
If you're talking about particularly that book, Warrior Woman, Dark Rain had done most of that research. That was going to be her book, but I got involved in it because I knew quite a bit about the battles and the treaties and so forth. So,
how about Tecumseh? Was he in his time? Were there people writing profiles of him? And do we have a clear picture of who this person was and Little Turtle and these people?
Well, I was surprised at how much information was available about Tecumseh and these people because they didn't have a written language of books and magazines and stuff about them. But what I found out was that people like Tecumseh and Little Turtle and Blue Jacket were awfully well documented because, in the first place, there were so many people who had, well, say, captives that had been adopted into the tribes, and later on they would do their memoirs and they grew up with Tecumseh. You know, they knew what he was like when he was a boy, and they knew how able and promising he was. They knew that he was born under a sign and high expectations. And then when these fellows began showing up at all the peace treaties and the different public events, you know, there were a lot of people writing down stuff about them. And then some of these people who had been adopted into the tribe, later on they went back to the white society and became missionaries or preachers or whatever, and they would write memoirs or they would be interviewed, and they could tell you, oh yeah, Tecumseh was terrifically active, smart as could be, he was always taking care of the old people, and they were even there in his first combat experiences, for example. So the amazing thing was, to me, was that there was so much information about these people instead of so little.
If you were describing Tecumseh, paint a picture of this person for us.
Well, several people wrote memorable, you know, they were so impressed by him when they saw him that they actually wrote down their impressions at the time. And they wrote that this was the most impressive Indian that they thought they'd ever seen. He was probably 5'11 or so. But they remarked on his bearing, they remarked on his looks, his physical power. He must have been just like an Olympic athlete in terms of physical development because everybody commented on it. Everybody was impressed by how charming and good-humored he was. He loved joking, he loved learning, he loved to learn as much as he could about the white man.
James Alexander Thom. His books include Follow the River and Panther in the Sky. When we come back, the author who is drawn especially to inspiring characters and how his readers have responded.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
James Alexander Thom has sold more than 2 million books writing about frontier America, including Indiana and the Native Americans who called this home. His books include Follow the River and Panther in the Sky and are noted for their historical accuracy and strongly drawn, sometimes inspiring characters. And that, says Thom, is by design.
That was one thing that I realized, that if you're writing about somebody who is an inspiring person, you're probably going to do some good. Because I came up with this motto about 15 years ago that inspiration is contagious. And originally, when I started writing contemporary novels before I got into the history, I was writing pretty much from the underside. You know, I'd been a newspaper man, and I didn't write about a whole lot of things that I admired because I was trying to expose stuff. But then I found out when I began writing about principled, courageous, generous, big-minded people, I began to get fan mail. You know, when I wrote about Mary Ingalls and George Rogers Clark and Tecumseh and people like that, I began to get a real response from the... I got thousands of letters from people because they had found, hey, here's somebody I can admire, and I'm hungry for that. So I stumbled into that. I wasn't smart enough to figure it out myself, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad I did stumble into it because... not only has it helped me, you know, make enough off my books to make a living, but I get letters from people who say that reading my books have changed their lives. One of my favorite contacts with a fan was an American Army officer who has been over there in the Middle East for 5 or 6 tours. And he said he's worn out 5 copies of Long Knife because he always carries it and uses George Rogers Clark as an example of how to be a good officer, how not to waste your men, how to take care of them, and how to get things done effectively. So,
and it's Long Knife is your historical novel based on George Rogers
that's
Clark.
That's right, right. Uh-huh. Now, I consider that, you know, the fact that a guy wore out 5 copies of that book a very good thing. Because one thing about Clark was he didn't waste lives. He did as much as he could without sacrificing a whole lot of people. Now, my wife does not like George Rogers Clark. The reason, obviously, is that he did much more than almost anybody in destroying her people's reign in their homeland, you know. He used to do the scorched earth policy of going up in the autumn, burning the villages and burning all the crops and leaving the Indians homeless and hungry through the winter. She doesn't like Clark for those reasons, and I can understand that because she's a Shawnee. But I used to say to her, people who were his enemies used to go and visit him after he was an old man. They used to go and visit him because they admired him so much. And when he was present at a treaty, they only wanted to talk to him, I said, because they respected him, you know. And I said, if you would just read that, you would realize he was somebody you'd respect. She says, I don't want to respect him. But that's that frontier that I was talking about that was so much more complicated than we think.
You've written about 12 novels.
Yeah.
There's remuneration for that. I mean, you get to make a living. Is there something else that you get out of that?
I've made a not a big living. I haven't become a rich man. I would be pretty well off by now, except that I've spent an awful lot of money on lawyers trying to protect the countryside. I won't go into that, but trying to protect some of the countryside from being destroyed and exploited. I've spent a lot of money on lawyers, and so we're comfortable, but we're not rich people. But the real rewards have come. I mentioned the fan mail. People who say that the books would inspire them in one way or another. But I think the best thing was, Dark Raymond remembers this, we were up at Fort Wayne one time and at a book signing, and there were people lined up bringing their books over. And one lady came along who didn't have a book. And she was waiting in line, and she's a terrible-looking woman. She looked like she'd been beaten up every day of her life, you know. And she came up to her place in front of me. She just stuck out her hand and said, I want to thank you for saving my life. And I said, well, you're welcome, but how did I do that? And she said, well, I've had an awful life, and I reached a point where I was getting ready to kill myself. And she said, somebody told me, you need to read Follow the River. And so I read it, and I thought to myself, well, if that little woman could get through that, I know I could get through this. And she said, I've never thought of suicide since. So that one woman basically gave me the best reward an author could ever get. She was inspired to go on living just by some story I told. You can't beat that.
Are you surprised to find yourself at age 81?
Well, there are a lot of reasons why I shouldn't still be here. Yes. Yeah, I'm very pleased, though, because I'm still awfully active for somebody my age. I've had wonderful health. I've taken good care of it. I try to do half mental work and half physical work because that way I can keep going longer. I've got a lot of work yet to do, and I don't have any cutoff date. I mean, there will be a cutoff date, but I'm not planning on, you know.
Do you ever think about what happens when we're gone?
Oh, I certainly do. At this age, you think about that a lot. I don't think of it with dread. We're not afraid of death. We've got so many blessings going now, we just want to keep enjoying them as long as we can.
James Alexander Thom, Indiana author whose historical novels have sold more than 2 million copies and are getting a second life, you might say, as e-books. He's 81 but still working hard. He was just inducted into the Indiana Journalism Hall of Fame. He and his wife Dark Rain, who's a Shawnee, live in a rebuilt 1840s cabin on a hill in the backwoods of Owen County. I hung out with them a couple of weeks ago and saw the hill where they like to watch the sun set across the valley. They said, come back sometime and watch it with us. I'm going to do that. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you'd like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.